Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Deezer, wherever you listen to the podcast, also on YouTube. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And as always, my co-host is here, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Good evening.
Nicole, I think this is the first time since you've been back that we've had somebody from the fetish world on.
Yay!
Yes, and not only that, look, everybody loves animals.
Yes, everybody loves animals, it's true.
Everybody likes BDSM.
We don't want anything to do with you.
Well, if they don't like animals, you don't want anything to do with them?
That's right.
Okay.
And animals, everybody loves humans. Okay.
Fucking Zoom already. I hate fucking Zoom. Go ahead, say.
I said animals are better than humans.
Okay. I've already cursed out Zoom and the show's been on for 30 seconds. Anyway, I was going to say, everybody loves BDSM too. Everybody loves a little spanky spanky, a little air pull, a little.
I like to think so.
What's that?
I said, I'd like to think so.
So it would take a genius to figure out how to combine the both of them that everybody likes. And we have that genius on the show tonight. That says, laughing in the background, it's Madame Marguerite.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. How flattering.
Oh, no, you are also a co-host of your own show on if you are a Sanctuary member, and you do so many things. I barely know where to start with you, but I will figure it out. Before we get started, Madame, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I've heard so many good things about the show. And it's great to finally be on.
Oh, I can't wait. And there's all sorts of stuff to get into. Before we get into it, though, we got to do our sponsors really quick. I got to keep up with your energy. And I'm drinking my favorite energy drink, Ray's Energy Drink. Now, I've tried every single energy drink on the planet. This is the best. This is you can't find it in stores. You can find it in gyms and GNCs or... If you're cheap like me, get 15% off. Use the code that's in our description on the podcast channels and also on YouTube and get 15% off a case. This is Galaxy Burst, and it's delicious. Tastes very fruity, almost like Fruit Loops. But the great thing about this, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. Watch the energy go. Here it is. I'm going to pop the top right now. Like I'm shot out of a cannon, like I'm a cheetah, to use an animal analogy. Also, do me some cooking if, well, you're in great shape, Madame. Are you vegan?
No, I'm not. I do eat animals.
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter because do me some cooking is the best vegan food you ever had. And it doesn't matter if you eat animals or not. 1253 Vine Street, right in the corner of Fountain and Vine. They got pulled pork sandwiches. They have a whole Mexican menu. The nachos are one of the 10 best nachos. Like LA Weekly, the only one without meat. I had a shrimp po' boy, Nicole had nachos last time we were there. Delicious.
That sounds good, actually.
It's all good. It's do me some cooking. And don't forget the fun fries. 1253 Vine Street. Now you, yes, that you do. And also, we have Audible. Audibletrial.com/DMS. You get a free book, access to hundreds of Audible originals, and a 30-day trial to Audible. I was joking last week, it makes a great Mother's Day gift. It really does. Get your mother a book that she likes and a subscription, and she'll listen to it. It'll be great. They have books on animals. They have books on S&M. They have everything from Shakespeare to smut. It's Audible. Audibletrial.com/DMS.
I'm a big fan of Audible. I've been listening to audiobooks while I go out and I walk around the town. It's just nice to have a book on in your ear while you're running errands.
It is. What book have you been listening to?
The Stand by Stephen King.
That's a good one.
Yes, it is. It's long.
What is that, like 10 hours?
40 hours.
40 hours. Get a 40-hour book.
Yeah.
For free.
So think about it. Free entertainment for like a week at least. Audible's a great deal.
And it's 40 hours. Listen to it while you work. Screw the boss. Anyway, Madame is here now. Madame, You're obviously from the East Coast. You're from New York. Brooklyn, yep. I think?
Yeah, Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn.
And me too. That's one thing we have in common. I was born in Brooklyn, but I lost my accent. You never did.
No, I didn't. I never did. Although sometimes my accent, like, I get like this weird accent sometimes. Like, it goes in and out, and I don't know what it is, but sometimes I have like a combination of accents. It's interesting.
Well, but when you go back to New York, they're all like, oh, you sound so Californian now.
Yeah. And, you know, I taught myself Russian a long time ago. Not that I really use it or you know, can hold a conversation, but I also recently started trying to teach myself Arabic. And so, like, I have this combination, this accent of, like, the languages because I'm, you know, like, practicing and stuff. So it's accents are really an interesting, funny thing. It's a really interesting telling behavior that people have, you know.
It's interesting. And either it fades or it does. You have to really think about it and work on it to have it fade.
Yeah. And for what, you know? It's I don't think it's necessary. I like accents. I think accents and dialects are wonderful.
So Brooklyn will always be in your voice.
For sure. Yeah.
No, I was watching the Son of Sam documentary, and it was great because I hadn't been in New York in a while just to hear all those accents of people. Like, I'm scared to go into my car. And I'm like, oh, man, I missed that. But now you are Madame.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked this of many of our Dom guests and our guests in the scene. Because we've had mistresses, we've had the ladies, we've had bossies, we had bossy Delilah.
Mm-hmm.
Where does Madame fit on the pecking order?
Well, you know, I mean, none of them really are a matter of a pecking order, right? They're just honorifics. You know, we all earn our honorifics the same way by practicing in a way that makes submissives entrust us with their bodies and their minds and, you know, whatever it is that we're playing with, their kinks. You know, this is a very intimate, vulnerable space you have to be in. And, you know, it don't just wake up and call yourself a dom. You know, other people, the community, are the ones that, you know, decide whether or not you're a dom, because there's a big difference between dominating and domineering. So, you know, just because you're loud and you, you know, behave in a certain way doesn't mean that you're dominant, you know. So it's an honorific that's earned, and everybody gets to choose what their honorific is. And sometimes people have their mentors, you know, choose their honorifics for them, or they get their names from their mentors, you know. So I chose Madam because I am 100% lifestyle, and Marguerite is my name. It's my birth name. My mother gave that name to me when I was born. And I wanted an honorific and a title that anybody could use, that I wouldn't be imposing my, you know, sexuality or dynamic or things like that on people, so that it's an honorific that, you know, I mean, if you're not willing to call me Madam, you know, that's kind of a deeper issue, right? If I, you know, if I'm asking you to call me Madam, whereas maybe goddess, I could understand somebody being uncomfortable calling me goddess, or somebody being uncomfortable calling me mistress, because, you know, people standing around wouldn't understand. But if you call me Madam in a public space, nobody's going to look at you awkwardly. You're not going to out yourself by calling me Madam. So that's why I chose that honorific, because I, you know, you can't, if you're going to be with me, you can't be in, you know, you can't put me in a closet. You know what I mean? I understand other people have their boundaries, but my personal submissives are not in the closet. They don't wear masks when we do videos. They don't wear masks when we walk around. And it's because, you know, I'm out, and I'm, you know, my duty is to create a safe space. And if I'm not safe in that space, I can't expect anybody else to feel safe. So I wanted an honorific that anybody could use, so that I didn't have to pretend I'm somebody I'm not in public.
That's very smart.
Thank you.
Although sometimes they wear prosthetics and horns and other things, but we'll get to that in a second. So your name is Marguerite. It wasn't a takeoff of the famous Marguerite that had the affair with Prince Edward and killed the guy. No? Okay.
No, no. Although when I first started my domination career, if I typed in Madame Marguerite, that's what would pop up. But now if you type in Madame Marguerite, I am what pops up. So I like that. I like that.
You have, what's the search engine, or SEO? You have better SEO than the world famous Marguerite, who killed a man and bribed Prince Edward to get off with the letters there. Okay, great.
That gives me pride. I'm proud of that.
As you should, but she still pops up every now and then. But yeah,
that's okay. Like, that's all right. I don't want to erase the woman. I just like that. I'm up there. I'm up there with the greats. You know what I mean?
Well, trust me, I know what you mean. But now, growing up in Brooklyn, now, how did you get into the lifestyle? I haven't really. I've listened to you on a few shows, and I haven't really gotten an answer to this. How did you get into the lifestyle?
I feel like, kink is my sexuality, and I've always been, kind of like deemed kinky. Like when I was very young, I was interested in women before I was interested in, I should say girls, because I was a teenager, and people treated me like I was freaky because of that.
Teenagers can lust after adults. It just can't be the other way around.
Right. And, I just wasn't interested in boys. That didn't make me freaky. I thought that sexuality was important. I believe that relationships were important. I believe that love was important. When I saw things about how, there were all sorts of laws that kept people apart and demonized different types of sexualities and didn't honor unions and things like that. And, people getting torn away from their partners and things like that. That was the sort of thing that seemed really, really heinous to me. And so, people would take my appreciation and respect and, importance that I put on sexuality, and they considered me freaky, because I was willing to be, with who I wanted to be with and not with who society said I should be with. I understood very young that I was attracted to girls, that I liked girls more than I liked boys, that I had no interest in boys. And, I wasn't going to pretend. I wasn't pretending about anything else in my life. I wasn't going to pretend about that. So from a young age, people just called me freaky. So I didn't have any, that kind of like conditioned me to just be like, okay, whatever. If there's something I want to do, there's nothing holding me back. They're already calling me a freak. People are already calling me a freak. So what, all right, fine. I'm a freak. And so I just was a little more, what do you consider the first thing I did that was freaky? I mean, was it give a love note to a girl when I'm 12 years old? Was it sit in the back of the class writing poetry to?
No, I mean, who was the first person you spanked?
The first person I spanked? Oh, I don't know. I was a kid. I was a teenager. I was already dating girls. I was already, I'm sure I spanked one of them.
When did it hit you that you were into this?
I think I always saw, I don't see this as any different from like other sexualities. I guess I just, maybe I always included it. I kind of liked, different sensations. I guess I was like adolescent, it was always with me. It's like, when do you start developing your sexuality? Whenever I started developing my sexuality is when I knew that this was, I knew I had fetishes. I knew that there were parts of the body that I fetishized, sexualized more than others that weren't particularly necessary for sex, like, hip bones and things like that, and the little dimples on the lower back, these are all, high heels and things like that, so I always liked the idea of people being on leashes for me. I always wanted to walk people around, I mean, I guess I was like maybe 12, or maybe I was even 10, it might have even started younger than that. I would play with dolls and the, because people would invite me to play with dolls. And so I'd be playing with dolls, and before you know it, like all the dolls would be in like a threesome together and things like that. So, the woman would be, they'd be in an abusive relationship, and the woman would be beating the Ken doll up and, running over them with the truck and stuff. And, you know, people wouldn't invite me back to play with dolls, but, you know, who knows when it started.
You traumatized Barbie. Barbie's not vanilla anymore.
Yeah, my friend had this Madonna doll. Okay, she was Madonna. And when you took off her blouse, she had nipples. And so I used to have Madonna beat up all the Ken dolls and all the boy dolls and all the wrestlers. You know, they had wrestlers where they had like a hole in the butt, you know, finger puppets. So, you know, she'd be putting her, I'd have Madonna with her shirt off, putting her boot all the way up his butt, you know. So, I mean, I was doing that at like 9 or 10, you know, so who knows?
9 or 10, you got like Macho Man, motorboating right. Madonna with dolls.
Right. You know, so, I mean, who knows when it started? Did it start then? You know, I don't know.
It's just always been there.
Yeah, it's just always been there. It's been there.
There's some people that have the story.
As long as I've known what sexuality is, it's been there.
There's just some people that have the story, like, I, you know, something happened and I, you know, the teacher spanked me, or, you know, I did something to somebody and it really sparked something. But you've always, it's always been there.
Yeah, and you know, the way I became a professional dominatrix was, and I told this story a couple of times, but really what it came down to, it was my, I had a production company. I started as a writer, and then eventually I became a screenwriter and then a producer, and I had my own production company and all that. And, you know, Superstorm Sandy hit and my business didn't recover. So I, you know, was thinking about what else I wanted to do. And at this point, you know, I had a lot of interest in sexuality. Something that I've always done was, I've always been the person that people came to when they had a closet to come out of. Regardless of what kind of closet it was, I was always the first person that somebody admitted something to. You know, when one of our friends had to come out as gay, I was the first person they came to. When one of my friends got pregnant by somebody they weren't supposed to, I was the person they told. When somebody, you know, was trans, I was the first person that they told, you know what I mean? So I was always the, you know, this person. So I said, you know what, I should do this professionally. And I had people that encouraged me. I was always hanging out in gentlemen's clubs because I love women. And one of my favorite things to do is go to a gentleman's club and just spend time with women and money on women. And they would always tell me I should be doing it.
Yeah, there's the irony, because every gentleman's club, if a woman walks in, they're the center of attention.
Oh yeah. And I love it. And I love it. And I love that too. I love it. So I've got some good stories.
No tip required. Just
what'd you say?
No tip required. If you're a woman going to a gentleman's club. I took my ex-girlfriend, she'd never been to a gentleman's club. I took her to a gentleman's club, and literally within 2 minutes, a girl was diving right into her crotch. It was great.
Oh yeah, I loved it. And the treatment I got, and you know, I love women. So they could tell I love women. And so you know, I'm very good to the women. So I'm always a big favorite, because I'd spend a lot of money to just hang out, you know, I'd order food, they could have whatever they want. You know, I one time went with a gentleman, and there's this place, Vivid, in Manhattan. Vivid, you know, like Vivid Entertainment.
Right,
Gentlemen's Club. It is absolutely beautiful. I love it. Anyway, you go up to the top and you're like on a balcony, and you know, it's 3 floors. So all the poles are there, all the women, you could look over this balcony. And at a certain point on the hour, all the ladies come out and they stand on the stations. And so everybody's out. And I was there with somebody, and he had a stack of money. There must've been $1,000 there. I said, how much money do you have? I said, give me your money. And so he gives me the stack of money. And I said, watch this. And I threw it off the balcony for all these women. And I tell you, it was exhilarating. I mean, there was just so many bills, but that was so much fun. And then the look on his face, like he was going to jump over the balcony after it. That was great.
Yeah, I'm guessing in this scenario, you were the one that got laid. Just a hunch.
Well, you know, what he got to do was watch his money fly off the balcony. I mean, it was very pleasing for me.
A lot of
he wasn't complaining when it was over, though.
A lot of hip bones and ass dimples and all sorts of things that night.
That's right. That's right. The little, the jiggly thing that I like, all of that.
Wait a second. I thought you said you like hip bones and like ass dimples. Where's the jiggle? Because
you've been to gentlemen's clubs. You know that they could jiggle. You know they jiggle. You know what I'm talking about.
I know jiggle.
You know,
you were living one dream and then you kind of went to another one. Started in New York or you started here?
I actually started in New York. I started with, you know, I mean, when I started, I wasn't really taking it so seriously. I was doing like foot fetish parties and things like that. And, you know, started out just as kind of like a hobby, but, you know, it turned into something more. And, you know, at that time, you know, with the production company, I was going back and forth between New York and LA anyway. And, you know, so I was familiar with LA, but I ultimately moved to California because, you know, I felt like the scene was a lot better out here and the opportunities, you know, I wanted to be part of the community out here. So I moved out here to be a dominatrix.
And by the way, the question that I brain farted on two minutes ago that I was trying to get out, where do you get the confidence? Have you always had it?
My confidence?
Yes.
Let's see. Have I always got the confidence? I think that when I was young, and I kind of vividly remember this memory, I was in the fourth grade, so I must have been maybe 9 years old. It dawned on me because I was wearing two different earrings. And somebody said something to me like, you know, you're not supposed to wear two different earrings or something, you know. And it dawned on me that no matter what I did, not everybody was going to like me. Some people were going to like, no matter what I did, some people were going to like it. And no matter what I did, some people were not going to like it. And I acknowledged that the best way to handle this would be to always make sure that I was doing what I wanted to do, that making sure that I was happy with myself and doing the thing that I, you know, would stand behind. And, you know, that really kind of carried me because I just tell myself that I'm not gonna please everybody. There's going to be a lot of people that don't like me. There's going to be a lot of people that hate me. There's going to be people that will never even give me the time of day. But I have to focus on, I can't focus on those people. I don't have enough time in my lifetime to adjust for every person that doesn't like me. So I have to, you know, decide who I'm going to please. And I'm going to please myself above all. And anybody who's like me or appreciates that will gravitate towards me. And that's exactly what has happened.
Because I would think being a dominatrix, it's... there's got to be days where, you know, you're not feeling as confident as others, but you still got to boss people around and put them in their place. Or does that make you feel good when you start doing that?
I don't really boss people around. My job as a dominant is to, you know, get people to improve, you know, be them best selves.
Right.
So I'm not really bossing people around. You know, if you come to me, you're willing. I'm not going to waste my time, you know, bossing you around. You know, if it's going to be a fight, if it's going to be an argument, then go find somebody else.
When I say bossing people around, like telling somebody to lick your boots and things like that, and you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, if they're coming in for that, it's a session. You know, it's work. It's not. You know, I'm very good at what I do. I know what I'm there for. I have conviction in what I do. So, you know, my attitude doesn't really change. Hey, you know, if I'm having a bad day or something and, you know, something's going on, I have some sort of tragedy or I'm not feeling good or something. And, you know, it's better to just not have the session than to, you know, have the session. But I haven't had that experience, you know.
Right.
I go in and I do what I'm there to do. You know, I understand that the people that come to see me, they need what I'm doing. So,
oh sure,
I do it.
And look at that smile.
Yeah.
But so here's, yeah, because it's weird because it is a job.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to think, like, when is it? When does it feel like a job? Is that mainly like setting up the sessions and scheduling and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, anytime it's a professional session, it's a job. You know, I have my personal submissives, my elite pets, as they're known in the community. And, you know, the situations with them are very different. But even then, you know, they are my responsibility, you know, their comfort and their safety. And their, you know, there's responsibility there. It's not a one way street. It's not just that they serve me. I also, you know, they're serving me for a reason. You know, I also fulfill something in them. So, you know, dynamics are always work. But, you know, when it's a session, it's a job, you know, because I'm getting paid. You know, not that I'm going to let somebody top from the bottom. You know, I have my services that I offer. I have my style that I offer. If they come to me with a script, you know, I'm not going to rehearse their lines, but mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty easy, but it is work.
And I noticed that you're into women, but, on your website and other places, you talk about men serving you and men doing this and men doing that.
All my submissives are men.
What's that?
Most of my submissives are men.
That was my question.
Yeah. I've had some women who have served me personally, but currently and most of my clients are men also. You know, sometimes I have female clients, but most of them are men.
Yeah. They need some improvement, need a little discipline, need a little shine a boot here and there, suck a toe once in a while, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right. They need to be reminded of their place.
So here's the, you find your niche. And I guess you'd have been doing it for a while. How did the animals get into this?
I started with animal play. And that definitely streams from childhood. When I was younger, I had this entire imaginary family called the Fowley family, and it was completely animals. I even had animals like Bambi, Thumper, and Flower. I had a lion who was allergic to his tail. I had, you're gonna like this one. I had a cat, his name was Fowley Bad Cat, and he had his three girlfriends, the scary cats. So, you know, I mean, this is what I was coming up with in like kindergarten. You asked me how far back it goes. Okay, well, in kindergarten, my imaginary cat had three girlfriends. So, so it started with that, and it's just I kind of have this like technique when I'm dealing with people, especially men. Particularly men, I don't really have to use this technique when I'm dealing with women. But a lot of times when I'm dealing with men and they start to frustrate me and aggravate me, I just imagine them as animals, and when I do that, that gives me patience. Because, you know, if a dog does some of the things that a man does, you know, it's a little easier to have sympathy, you know. So I imagine people as animals. And also the other thing too is, to be honest with you, I really do agree with what Nicole said earlier. Animals are superior to people. That's why I capitalize the A in animal and I lowercase the M in man. Because I think that animals are superior in a lot of ways. And so I like to, you know, tap into that to make people bring out some positive things and some strengths in them, which we do have. You know, it's not like I'm pulling something out of thin air. This is, you know, my clients come to me to bring something glorious out of them. But I do it in the form of an animal.
So you're not dehumanizing the men. You're bringing them up to an animal.
Yeah. Absolutely. 100%. And that's why my clients come to me. You know, I get into their heads. I have my program. It's called the Petsy Medaminal Scale. It's a system that I use to identify people's inner animal. I taught a few classes on it. And, you know, I get into their heads and I get into their motivations and, you know, subconscious and things that they're not really even noticing. And, you know, our sessions are to really, you know, have fun and build their confidence and make something, you know, good out of them and not tear them down or demean or degrade them, you know? It's to give them a purpose.
Well, everybody seems to think I'm a bear. Now, that's because of my size and my physique, but you've said that everybody thinks they're a bear and they're not.
Right.
Well, I think I'm a real cuddly teddy bear, but I don't know. Maybe I'm not.
You should take my Petsy Medaminal Scale.
Go ahead.
You should take my Petsy Medaminal Scale. I'll be able to tell you what kind of animal you are. Because, you know, it also could fluctuate too. You know, I mean, you could be whatever animal you identify with. But, you know, I think that the best way to do animal play is to really identify characteristics that are like really there and really, you know, connect with animals. And also to be creative too, because one of the big things is I find that people are like, oh yeah, I'm a bear or I'm a pig or I'm a cat or a dog. And, you know, if I try to ask them what kind of bear they are, what kind of dog they are, they really can't get into it. And you know what that tells me? That tells me that you're thinking that the only animals you can be are these animals. I bet if I gave you a list of other animals like wombats and wolverine and honey badger, and you know, I bet there's a lot of animals that I could list for you that, you know, if I told you the characteristics of them, you'd be able to relate. And then I bet you probably can't even name all the bears that there are. So, you know, I find that people are usually just stuck in a box. And if you're going to come to me to tap into your imagination and turn you into an animal, like, throw the box away. Throw the box off the balcony, into the river, throw it away.
I mean, you have, like, duck-billed platypi.
Yeah.
You have, like, mythical animals like minotaurs and unicorns. Like, what quality does a duck-billed platypus have that somebody was like, you're like, oh yeah, that's a duck-billed platypus?
Well, I wanted somebody, so the duck-billed platypus, he's one of my personal submissives, and basically my elite pets, usually the way it goes is I tell them what pet I want, and then they decide, you know, which one of them is going to be that pet. And so what I wanted was, I wanted a platypus to swim up to me in the pool and bring me drinks and things like that. And I thought it would be adorable because I got these little, you know, like webbed feet that are supposed to help you swim. And so I did that for the fingers and the little tail and the bill. And I just imagined a sexy, gorgeous, beautiful twink of a man with this platypus bill. And that's exactly what I got. My elite unicorn, he's usually a unicorn. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful creature. Jump for joy said, I'll be a platypus. That's why these are my elite pets, because they will do anything and be anything for me. They show up, they're perfect little angels, if you ask me. And that's how I got my platypus. But that was because, you know, Madame Marguerite wanted a platypus, and my pets love me so much, they're willing to do these things.
Well, we know you get what you want. But
that's right. That's right. That's how they serve me. They be whatever animal. They transform into whatever animal I decide they're going to be. Although sometimes my unicorn turns the animal into a something corn. You know, like I said, I wanted a zebra. And they were like, oh, zebra corn. You know, so. But that's okay. I'm flexible.
Do you have multiples of the same animal, or is everybody a different animal?
I try to make everybody a different animal. I don't think I have multiples of the same animal. I don't think so. I try to make everybody a different animal. You know, I like to be everybody, be a little creative, you know?
Now, how far do you take this? Do you put these people in cages?
Yes.
Do they speak? Can they speak, or do they have they have to speak in animal sound?
Yep. They got to do what animal type things do. If you're a dog and you go up on hind legs, I give you a treat. And pat you on the head and praise you for being on hind legs. That's right. I let them wear knee pads because, you know, I mean, most animals are not on hind legs. We go all the way. Listen to me. I have an aftercare package for my animal play sessions because I've had clients growling on the way out. And I said, hold on. We have to go back and do some more work. You can't go out into the world still growling.
It got so intense that the people started growling on the way out.
Yeah, and let me tell you something else. When I'm out with my pets at events and stuff,
yeah,
people don't go near my pets. People do not go near my pets.
Well, that's a given.
They are convinced that is a wild animal. And the way I behave like they're a wild animal. When I transform, there's a video of me that I did with Harriet Sugar Cookie. And there's a video of me transforming one of my pets into a wolf. And, you know, when he's going into that wolf mode, I'm not acting like we're all fine and dandy. I'm waiting to see whether or not he's going to obey me. I'm waiting to see whether I'm treating him like he's an animal that is very capable of ripping my face off. And because I behave that way and I treat them that way, they get into that headspace, no problem. You ever see somebody in subspace?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I get them into pet space real quick. You know, and it's a process. And that's why I use my scale. It's a series of questions that I ask my pet and gets them thinking and puts them into the space. And as they're doing it, I have a whole process of how I dress them and how I, you know, the things that we start focusing on. And before you know it, they're on all fours and they're behaving how they believe that animal would behave. And there's nothing, you know, I can't even shake them out of it. If I need them to turn into a human, I have to say, okay, you're gonna get on hind legs and you're gonna turn into a person now. You're gonna imitate a person now. And that's how I get them to come back to being a person by, you know, pretend to be a person now. Show me your
human. Put a dish of water there for them, or
yep. I have snacks.
Dog food.
I have snacks that I have chosen ahead of time based on their dietary needs and you know, habits and things like that. I don't want to give anybody something that they don't eat as a person. But, you know, it's all themed, you know, for the animal that they are. It's all themed. It's in a consistency that animal would eat. You know, it's out of a bowl, animal bowl, or out of a pouch or something that I'm giving them. They got to earn their treats. I'm not just giving it to them. They got water in a bowl.
If somebody's a bird,
what'd you say?
They're eating like this if they're a bird? Yeah, okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's how they do it. The papers down? I mean, what?
Yeah, we do all that.
Really? So they piss and shit on the paper?
One of the very first sessions I ever had, animal play sessions, you know, I go through all my do's and don'ts, right? I'm like, okay, these are the things you can do. These are the things you can't do. I tell him that he's not allowed. He can't bite me, can't scratch me, and he can't destroy any furniture, right? Okay. We're midway through the session, and he squats down, and I think he's just pretending, and he squats down, and he takes a dump on my floor.
Oh!
This end of the session.
Technically, that's in the rules.
But technically, it was in the rules. So now I say you're not allowed to go to the bathroom. But if it's if it's not in the dungeon, that's not something we could do in the dungeon. But if it's in a private, setting, and that's something that they want to do, you know, I'll take them for a walk and let them pee in their own bushes.
So how many pets do you have?
I have two personal pets, my elite pets. Solid submissives, but I think I have a total of 53 pets. So that's 53 times I transformed people into animals. Sometimes a person does like multiple pets. But talking about how many people I've transformed, I mean, probably 40.
And you, I don't know if you do or they do. I guess they're in the cage, but they have elaborate costumes.
Yeah.
Like there's a big picture that's all over your website, and all over your media, that the guy looks like he's from the movie Cats. And he looks better than the people that were in the movie Cats. And he's hanging out with you. I mean, what's the difference between this and cosplay? I mean,
I guess it's because, you know, cosplay, you're imitating a character, right?
Right.
And this, I'm just transforming people into animals.
Now, I remember when I was on your show, I was because, yeah, I'm a dilettante at this. I'm not a lifestyler like you, but I was questioning what the appeal of getting kicked in the balls was, which you do.
Yep.
And the reason I was questioning it is because I would think the whole thing is to get aroused, and with a man, that's how you get aroused. If it hurts, you don't want it hurting while it's aroused. That is what I'm saying. What is the appeal to them
of becoming an animal? Let's see. Well, first of all, you get to shed social etiquette, right? So you're really getting rid of, you know, we have a lot of human constructs that are very unnatural for us. Okay. Most of the things that we do are foreign. The things that our bodies are not designed to do. Even the way we walk and stand and sleep and, you know, have sex and things like that, we do a lot of things that are against our nature. So animal play is an opportunity for people to shed some of that social etiquette. And a lot of the people that come to me, they come to me because they have a lot of pressure on them, which is why a lot of submissives go to dominance, is because they have a lot of pressure on them and they can't handle the pressure, or they don't want to handle the pressure. They want to get away from, you know, some of these human responsibilities and human demands and social etiquette, and they want to shed that, you know. The pressure of society really makes people feel bad about themselves, really makes people feel trapped. And this gives people an opportunity to, like, you know, be a little free and be a little wild and just do some of the things they want to do. And to be praised for things like catching a ball and standing on hind legs. You know, they don't have to, you know, They don't have to, you know, say the right thing or do the right thing or guess the right gift or make the right decision. You know what I mean? They don't have to do anything. They just have to catch the ball and bring it back to me. You know, they have to sit down with the ball in their mouth until I take it from them, drop it when I tell them to drop it. And they got to do that a couple of times. And I praise them. I tell them what a cute boy they are. I tickle their balls with my foot. You know, they get head scratches or whatever, you know. You know, fine. You be a good boy. Do all this. I'll let you hump the pillow in the corner. You know what I mean?
What about humping your leg? Do they do that? Or
no, they're not humping my leg, but they can hump the pillow in the corner.
Oh, okay.
You know, but you know what I mean? It gives them an opportunity to, you know, get some attention and, you know, feel good about themselves and feel useful and have some fun without really having too much pressure. You know, I had a truffle hog. One of the best experiences I had was with my truffle hog. You know, he comes in, he tells me he wants to be a pig. He's insisting he wants to be a pig. He's telling me, oh, I'm fat, I'm sloppy, I'm a slob. I want to be a pig, I'm a disgusting pig. I say, you're not a disgusting pig. If you're my pig, you're a truffle hog and you're here to work. Or I said, you're going to go around. And I turned everything in the dungeon into a tree. I said, that's a tree, that's a tree, that's a tree. The spanking horse is a tree. The pillar in the room is a tree. The bench is a tree. Everything's a tree. And at the base of the tree, you're going to dig and you're either going to find truffles or you're going to find rocks. And at the end of the day, if you don't find me enough truffles to send to the restaurants, I'm sending them bacon. And so I had him running around the dungeon looking for truffles. And, you know, of course, I decided what was a truffle and what was a rock. And, you know, at the end of the day, I sent my restaurant a nice hefty serving of truffles. And I didn't have to turn my truffle hog into bacon that day. But, you know, he walked in feeling like a fat, nasty slob. And he walked out feeling like, you know, a prize pig.
Oinking all the way.
Oinking all the way. He had a great time. He was laughing. He was, you know, the anticipation of not knowing whether or not I was going to tell him it was a truffle or a rock, you know, was exciting for him, you know, so there was a lot of really great benefits.
How's a pig going to know? They don't know. They look the same.
Right, exactly. How's he supposed to know? He's just a silly hog. He doesn't know. He knows that he smells truffles, but, you know, he's got a powerful snout. That truffle could be anywhere.
Does he have a literal snout?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I give them snouts. I give them everything. I would love to find little pig hooves, but, you know, I make them walk around like this. You know?
By the way, for people that are listening on audio, you put your hands in like pig's feet. It's great.
Yep, that's right. Little pig's feet. I make them walk on that, you know. Oink. They got to oink. That's how they communicate. They oink. We have special gestures, safe gestures, right? So whenever I'm transforming, because you asked before if they talk. No, they do not get to talk. They can communicate with me, but they can't talk. We go ahead of time. We have some safe gestures that I make them show me. Show me what it means when you're really upset. Show me what it means when you don't like something. And
what's an example of a safe gesture with an animal?
It depends on the animal, right? So, like, let's give you a good example. I was out with my pets and we were in public, and I say to my monkey, you know, if you grin, you grit, show your teeth, that tells me that you're upset and, you know, something's happening that you don't necessarily like. And if you grit your teeth and you back up, that means there's something that you want to stop. And so that's how, you know, so in other words, gritting his teeth was yellow and gritting his teeth and backing up was red.
Right. Because otherwise he's going.
Right. Oh, yeah. Exactly. And I don't know if he's trying to tell me something, if he's not trying to tell me something, you know what I mean?
Now, before you became the genius who combined animal play and S&M, were you ever involved in the brony scene or the furry scene?
I was not ever involved in the furry scene, but I gotta say, I love furries. Love furries. I do. I love them. The thing that I like more about animal players is that, you know, less clothes. But I love furries.
So, go ahead, Nicole.
I was gonna say, have you ever thought of yourself as an animal? What animal would you be?
You know, somebody did ask me that and it got me thinking about it. And I believe that my inner animal is the rat. Very much so. Yeah, I got a lot of characteristics of the rat. I'm a highly underestimated creature. I could live in, you know, I could thrive and flourish in any sort of environment. I'm very good at obtaining resources. I'm very creative and, you know, social. You know, rats are the type of animals, they take care of one another, and they're very clean. They have, you know, they're misunderstood, and they, you know, people believe a lot of false things about rats, which I feel is, I could relate to that, right? And, you know, but they're actually, they take care of each other, and they're very clean, and they're very social, and they're very protective, and, you know, they come up with all kinds of great ideas and strategies and teamwork and figuring out how to do things, and they're good leaders, and they're just very intelligent, and, you know, I think definitely the rat. And we're, you know, New York is a place where we thrive.
I was gonna say, yeah, so lions are not the king of the jungle, the rats are.
I think so, yeah. I mean, Nicole, you know, they everybody's the king of their own world, you know.
Well, speaking of that, Nicole, what animal are you?
Well, I relate most to the cat. You might call me a wild cat. I might be too big, I might be a big cat, but I definitely like, I use like the cat emoji when I'm talking to like my best friend. So it's like I'm in cat face. I just really relate to cats. I always have.
That's cool. Do you have like a particular type of cat?
When you said that they don't really know what type, I thought about it. I'm like, I'm guessing a Bengal would be closest to me, but I could be like a wilder cat, like a Maine Coon or something.
Cool. And you know, Mark, you said you were talking about bear. What kind of bear do you think you'd be?
Well, I'm a gentle bear. I'm not a gentle bear. So I don't know. Maybe a polar bear. I don't know enough about bears to really know. I'm not a mall the people in the park sort of a bear, but
Panda?
Panda. Yeah, I'm a panda. I've heard that before.
Panda. And you know what? You got the
makeup on. No, when I put the makeup on, but I have been compared to a panda. So I just think it's too easy. I think people are just going on appearances. There's probably some other animal. If we really got deep into it, there's probably some other animal that you would find, but panda bear's good. Panda's cute. So I'll go with that. But
I got to take it back. I'm not a Bengal. When I have my big black coat on, I'm a black cat. Like that. My coat is kind of a staple to my wardrobe. It's really well known. People see me in it all the time, and it's got fur. That's not real fur at all. It's a big fur all around the sides, and I wear that a lot. So I'm a black cat.
So how do you treat your black cats, madam? Do you put saucers of milk out down for them?
Yeah, absolutely. When I'm playing with my, you know, I got a Savannah cat, somebody who is a Savannah cat, beautiful, beautiful.
Can they snuggle up to you like real cats would?
Yeah, she sure does. She snuggles up to me, and she, you know, she decides when she wants my attention and when she doesn't. And she, you know, rubs against me to get me interested in petting her. And, you know, I let her out of the house, and I didn't let the pups in the room out of the house. And so they got very jealous of her. And, you know, she chose to sit right outside the door instead of, you know, running around, you know, to make the pups very jealous. And, you know, she came in and she got a saucer of milk, and I played with the toy to try to get her attention, and she got distracted. And so I sat and I waited for her attention, because she's a cat and you can't chase cats around. And that's how I treated my cat, and it was delightful. And every time I stopped paying attention to her, she would stomp on over. It was beautiful. I had a book.
I also have that cat attitude of I get attention when I want it, and I reject it when I don't.
Yeah. That's how I treat my cats.
Very Nicole. Now, do you walk your dogs in public?
Not complete public. You know, public-ish. You know, right. Like I'll bring them to parties and things like that. You know, it's not really safe to, you know, walk people around on leashes and things
right.
like that.
But like a sanctuary or some place like that, you'll walk them around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they, you know, if they're trustworthy enough, they don't need a leash, but they usually need leashes.
Okay. Now, this is not all you do. I'm on your website right now, and you say like to moderate interests, which includes shoe and foot worship. And there's a lot of that on your Twitter and on your website. People love your feet and worship your feet.
Yeah.
I suppose you have nice feet. I don't know. I'm not the foot guy. I like when women have feet, but I'm not really, I don't, can't really distinguish between them, but What's so great about your feet?
Well, it's not necessarily my feet. It's feet in general. Yeah. You know, people that have foot fetish, you know, people that have any sort of fetish, it's, you know, it's about, you know, how they're wired. People develop foot fetish very early on.
You have long toes.
I do have long toes, you know, so, you know, it's people that fetishize feet. You know, I have the very first kink I entertained professionally was foot fetish. So I learned a lot about, you know, BDSM and fetish and kink in, you know, in terms that weren't necessarily personal from foot fetish people. They were the first, you know, so they have a foot, you know, very special place in my heart. So, you know, because they really introduced me to this professional world. You know, the first experiences I had that weren't, you know, personal experiences were with people that had foot fetishes.
And you also have as your light interest a tickle torture.
Yeah, I love tickling people.
And that can be torture. I've had well, I'm sure you do it like I'm sure you take it to another level, but I've had ex-girlfriends like you know, tickle me and it won't stop. Like at what point does tickling turn into to torture?
I think when you know, when people are laughing so hard that they can't breathe, or when they feel like they might pee because that would be embarrassing, and you know, where they just, you know, it's funny because, you know, tickling somebody could be potentially dangerous if you don't give them an opportunity to breathe and things like that. People have known to, like, you know, tickle until they pass out and things like that. But, you know, so I always make sure that they're, first of all, secured, right? But also just, you know, bringing them to that place where they feel like, you know, like they're just not going to be able to take it anymore, you know, whether it's they're going to, you know, lose their bladder, or they're going to pass out, or they're going to lose their breath, or they're getting a cramp or something, you know, it's.
I've had people come to you and say, look, I'm not ticklish. There's no way you can tickle me and you are able to tickle them and torture
them. I haven't had that experience yet. No, you know, I mean, the people that, you know, when I go into session, I'm not really saying, hey, there's this thing I want to do. Do you want to do it also? You know, I'm saying to them, what are your interests? What are your limits? And
if they're into tickling, they're already into tickling.
Yeah, they tell me, you know, so I'm not going to have a tickle session with somebody unless they, you know, one of their interests is tickling. You know, I'm not going to just, like, you know, pull it out of nowhere. You know, maybe I might do some tickling sensation, but that's not the same as, like, doing tickle torture. You know, tickle torture, you know, you got to consent to that. You know, they're not my personal submissives. They're my clients. So.
Right. And go ahead, Nicole. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, do you have any reptiles? And if so, do you feed them bugs?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what I feed to reptiles? What's a great thing for reptiles? Popcorn. Because reptiles could just, like, stick their tongues out and grab it. And it's, like, it's great because, like, and I call them bugs. You know, I say, here are your bugs. And I hold out the popcorn. I say, look at these delicious, you know.
Crickets
you got here. You know, and but yeah, I have an amphibian. I got a frog, a chorus tree frog. I had a snake, alligator.
Wait a second. That's so the reptile. The snake you would have to feed a mouse to.
Yeah, the snake. When I had the snake, we didn't feed her anything. But what I would feed a snake would be something like beef jerky, or if they don't eat beef jerky, a really good substitute for that would be like a Swedish fish or something like that, or, you know, like gummy, some sort of like gummy thing, or, you know, another really good snack to use for animal and pet play are, you know, Preffage Farm goldfish.
Right.
Those are really good. I'll use Cocoa Puffs for kibble.
Nice. Sure.
Yeah, that's a good one. So, you know, there's all kinds of things, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, seeds are really good. I use sunflower seeds for birds.
Sure.
Dried apricots are really good for people that don't eat meat, but are carnivorous animals, right? Because you can bite into it. It's very fleshy, you know, so it's more about, like, the texture and things like that. And then I'll try to get something, you know, if you're a meat eater, and you'll eat roast beef and things like that, and you're a tiger, I'll give you a slab of meat, you know, things like that.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Now, what is ice play?
ice play. So, you know, these are all different types of sensation plays. So, you know, using ice on somebody, you know, stimulates certain nerves and, you know, stimulates the nervous system in a way that's very unique because, you know, when you use ice, it's, you know, you're really conflicting the body temperatures, right? Because the areas that are not touched by ice are warm and the areas that are touched by ice are very cold. And so it's a really nice way to, you know, mess with the nervous system.
I was going to say that I heard on another interview, you studied the body and the pressure points and things like that. Is there one part of the body that is underused that we should know about, that you know, that maybe our listeners should know about, maybe I should know about? Because I played with ice and I gave my ex-girlfriend an orgasm and her nose started to bleed. And it was like the biggest one she ever had. So is there another part of the body or technique that I'm missing out on?
Let's see. Part of the body or techniques that you're missing out on. You know, I think that some really underserved parts of the body are like the lower back. You could touch people in the lower back. You know, I don't really know the names of the, you know, the muscles and the spots and the nerves and things like that. But if you touch people's lower backs, you know, they can really feel it in different parts. You know, you can feel it up here and in your legs and really, you know, tap into people's minds. You know, I think that the reason that area is so sensitive is because it really has a lot of messages flowing through it. And those messages are all coming from the brain. So I think that people really underserve the brain and really underserve the mind, because your mind can make you feel anything. Okay. So pain is a signal. Pleasure is a signal. These are all things that your body is telling you to experience. You know, they're messages. They're saying,
right,
pay attention to this area. So by really tapping into the mind and really understanding your nervous system and understanding your body and how you respond, what these responses are and what they mean, you can manipulate them. And so I think that the brain is really underserved. And I think the whole area, the spinal cord, that whole area of the back, I think those are areas that are underserved. You know, the your organs, right? Not that you should play with the organs, but, you know, people should be mindful of these areas. If you understand how your organs function and you understand how your organs produce chemicals, then you could go into sessions better and go into scenes better, because you know how to take care of your body in a way where you're going to process the chemicals that you need to have the good experience. You know, you need endorphins, you need serotonin, you need oxytocin. And, you know, these are chemicals that your body has to produce. Serotonin, your body takes a long time to produce this. If you deplete your serotonin, you know, you're going to feel miserable for a long time. So understanding how your body works and knowing that your gut creates a lot of the chemicals that we need, hormones that we need, and knowing what foods and, you know, how important it is to breathe and how important it is to drink water, you know, oxygen and water. These are things that, you know, people, we know we're supposed to have it, but nobody really understands why you need 8 glasses of water and things like that. So I would say that whole area, the internal parts, I think are really underserved in King.
Except for you, because you are, there was the Tiger King and you are the Animal Queen. But now the really heavy stuff that you get into, attitude adjustments. Now, sounding, which I don't even want to get into, but race play.
Yeah.
But it's selective. I and you're such an activist and very, very, very hashtag BLM and very, what is race play and is it what I think it is?
Well, first of all, I did a whole program on race play with, you know, a few other Dominas. First of all, if you think about kinks, right, a lot of what we do is people are facing things that make them uncomfortable. People are facing traumas. People are facing fears, right? So the types of bigotry that we experience, that it's no different, okay? So racial trauma is no different than any other type of trauma that we experience, right? So, you know, a lot of times you get people that are sissies and they want to be humiliated for wearing stockings and they want to be humiliated for wearing dresses and things like that. And you get people that want to be degraded you know, these are not people that want to be abused. These are people that want to work through a pain. They want to work through a trauma. They want to work through something. They want to recreate a situation in a way that's positive. And so race play is no different than that. There are people that they want to desensitize themselves to behaviors. They want to be built up, you know, in sort of a reverse way. So, you know, the same way people want to be degraded in other ways, in other areas of their lives, whether it's weight or behavior or sexuality or appearance, whatever it is, this is no different. I do think that race play is edge play, because you're dealing with psychology that you have to understand. You have to understand culture, you have to understand the issues, and you have to understand who you're playing with. So the reason race play is selective is because, to be honest with you, you know, there's not, I can't always relate to certain people the same way. I can, you know, I understand racial tensions when it comes to Arab and Muslim men. When Arab and Muslim men and even Arab women come to me and they say that they want to do this sort of race play with me, I understand it. And I could, you know, I understand the experience that they're looking for. And I understand the trauma that they are trying to work out. And I understand why they have developed a kink from this. But, you know, there are some people that have experiences that I can't necessarily relate to. I am African. I'm North African. My ancestors come from Morocco. You know, the only reason I'm light-skinned is because of colonization and rape and, you know, my people being, you know, captured and enslaved on an island that was far away from their home. And so these are experiences that I understand. But, you know, I'm not a dark Black man. You know, I'm not a dark Black woman. I can't pretend that my experiences are exactly the same. We have a lot of similarities, and these are my people. And, you know, when it comes to race, I'm very vocal about who I am. But, you know, there's some experiences. If I don't understand the experience, I can't really get into it, right? So somebody that's Hindi, you know, I wouldn't know where to start with somebody that's Hindi. They would have to educate me on that. You know, they would have to educate me on what makes them uncomfortable and why it makes them uncomfortable. They would have to educate me on the history behind whatever it is they want to explore. But if it's a history that I understand and a culture that I understand, you know, I'm happy to help people work these things out. You know, my clients are not coming to me to degrade them and abuse them. The reason they're coming to me is because they know that they are safe with me. They know that they are, you know, I do have respect for them, and I, you know, I am on their side. If they don't have that confidence and they don't know that, well, then that's not a scene and that's not a type of play that we can act out, because it could be harmful and not healthy for them. And that's the opposite of what I'm trying to do.
Well, have there been people that come to you that do want to be humiliated, do want to be, and you had to turn them away?
I've had some people that have come to me, you know, and, you know, I've told them that there are better people that they could go to.
Right.
And I've directed them to other, you know, other mistresses that are more, you know, more equipped to handle, you know, their particular scenes.
Wow. Just like a white man to mention race, but I mean, where's the time gone? But I've got I gotta turn this around, because I can't end on that. But you brought your animals to a lot of, and you've had contests at dom coms. Now, are other doms picking this up, and there's all sorts of animals running around, or?
Oh yeah, you know, I'm really excited, because when I first started in the scene, I really was, you know, I mean, there were, it's not like I'm, you know, I'm the first animal player. There were pet players and animal players. But when I first started, I saw a lot of just dogs and cats, and really, you know, not too many, you know, not too many animals outside the box. And now I'm seeing more and more animals. They come to the pet awards at DomCon, and, you know, we have like a little kitty parade sometimes, and, you know, people come out and they've got all kinds of costumes. And I've really seen the animal play and the pet community grow. I've seen some people that are very notable animal, you know, pet play spaces curators. Like we've got Mistress Wiley Wolf. They have been just phenomenal with all kinds of classes and events that they host. You know, so they've been some, you know, some things. I'm really excited, you know, people that have really gotten creative with it. And that's really what's exciting. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to invite people to be creative and really, you know, explore. And that's why I bring such elaborate animals to DomCon. You know, I want to inspire people.
What's the most elaborate animal besides the one with sweet match?
Probably my phoenix. My phoenix was more elaborate than my snow leopard. I brought the very first year. Let me tell you how I introduced myself to the DomCon world. There were two people that invited me. They were Mistress Porcelain and Goddess Phoenix. They were the ones that invited me to DomCon.
Right.
And I knew about the animal, the pet awards, as it was called back then by Mistress Ellen. And I knew about it, and I already knew that at some point I was going to be involved. You know, I was very interested in being a part of DomCon, and so I didn't want to compete, but I did want to honor Goddess Phoenix with one of my pets. And so I made this beautiful, beautiful phoenix, and with a prosthetic bill, feet, and everything, and the makeup done. And there were lights on his wings. So when he flapped his wings, and I had a remote control, and I had the settings already set. So when he flapped his wings and he started off slow, they just started to flicker. And then the more he flapped his wings and flapped his wings, the more the light would go, and it looked like he was on fire. And it was just beautiful. That was years ago. That was in 2017, I think, the beginning of 2017. And I mean, people are still talking about that.
I can imagine. I'm trying to picture just a phoenix flapping its wings all over your house.
Oh, this was at DomCon.
Huh?
This was at DomCon.
No, I know, but I mean, he's still a phoenix when he's doing the sessions, right?
Oh, well, we didn't do anything like that in his costume. We put the costume on. I spent months building the costume. Yeah. We
put the costume on. Just put him on. In his cage, and
he did his thing, and then we take the wings off, and he goes back to being a human.
Yeah,
that's what he does. So, that's okay. We do have a little ring here. It's like a cage with a little ring. It looks like a bird cage, and he does sit in it. I would love to do a photo shoot with him dressed up as a bird or a phoenix sitting in the little bird cage.
You should open a zoo.
I should, right?
Charge
I people. Have a monarchy. My monarchy.
Yes. Yeah, so how did you get the monarchy before we go?
So I had somebody at one of my parties called me the animal play monarch, because I always called it animal play and not pet play, because not everybody that plays is a pet. Some people are, you know,
right.
Animals, right? Without a handler. And so I would have these parties where my pets would battle each other. And they were just like role play parties, themed role play parties. Everybody had to come in character based on the scenario and, you know, act like, you know, they don't know each other and things like that. And I had animals, pets that I would have battle each other. And I was very, you know, like, you know.
Like cockfighting, or what are you talking about battle?
Like they would, so I give you a good example. Let's say I have my monkey fighting my hyena. In order for my hyena to win, he had to rip the monkey's tail off. And in order for the monkey to win, he had to fling pudding poo in the hyena's face. And of course, my hyena is wearing goggles. And, you know, it's not poo, it's chocolate pudding.
Right.
So I have them battle. I have them battle, and, you know, whoever wins, we place bets on who's going to win. But, you know, I was always like the queen in the scenarios, or the person in charge, or whatever. So somebody called the animal play monarch, and I only needed to hear that once to run with it. And that was that.
Well, I can see you've given Nicole lots of ideas. And we could talk to you all day. I definitely want to have you back. We've barely scratched the surface, and we haven't even, you know, we just barely talked about the pudding poo. Madam, tell everybody where they can get a hold of you, where they can become your pet, where they can take the test, DomCon, your talk show, everything you got going on.
Yep. So I got a few things going on. I got a show every Monday night that I co-host with Mistress Cyan. It's on sanctuarylax.com, and that's called In the Spotlight. You can find information there. And then, of course, you can always find me at DomCon. We got DomCon LA happening in person this August, and we're doing it in New Orleans in October. Yay. So come to the events, the convention. We're going strong. But if you want to contact me personally, all my membership sites, all my clip sites, how to get a session with me, it's all at madammarguerite.com. So if you know how to spell my name, you spell my name and you put a .com afterwards. And that'll bring you to everything. Everything is in, it's a one-stop shop.
MARGHERITE.
That's right. And that's madam with a E at the end.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And what a pleasure it's been. What a great conversation. We didn't even get to the Just for Fans. We got to have you back very, very soon. Nicole, would you agree?
I agree. I think she's been a great guest. This has been very entertaining.
Tell everybody how they can get all of you and what you've got going on, Nicole.
All righty. Well, you can reach me on my Instagram at Nicole6Books. That's my full name with the word books at the end. And if you need help growing your social media, I am currently helping people grow their social media profiles and get more followers. These are real followers, not like when you buy a bunch of fake followers. So they'll be actually active and give a shit about your projects and different things. And I'm also working on a short story called Ash Wednesday. And as soon as that's finished, my new book 13 will come to print, hopefully in Australia and Europe. And I'll also try to get it released in the U.S. Also, I'm working on a screenplay with Mark.
Yes. Oh, that's awesome.
Okay, I guess that's everything. And yes, I'm a goth comedian on all social media. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye. Hey. Thank you.